welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen.
With me today is abundance teacher and money coach, Jody Lynn Craven.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. Jody Lynn, as you know, we have lots of guests on the show. You were a guest originally. I mean, that's how you came into the show. And we learn about a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different personal stories, people experiencing the bumps and bruises of life. Our guest today has experienced more than his share. In fact, I would say they're probably more than bumps and bruises. They're more like being thrown off a mountaintop. And we're going to hear more about that. But yeah, he's been through the rough stuff and he's come out the other side glowing, which is pretty darn good. And so we're going to learn more about that. So his name is Fernando Javier and
Xavier.
Oh, okay.
I
apologize then.
That happens all the time.
I should have asked you about that before we started. That's my fault. That's on me.
That happens all the time. It's nothing new, so that's fine.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to the show, Fernando. And give us a little bit about your story. We love stories around here. So tell us your story.
Well, I think I'm a good storyteller.
Good. That helps.
Yeah. I've been through a lot in life, and a lot of people see that as negative, but I see that as a big positive because, I don't think you learn much unless you go through a lot of bad situations. And I think that's the only way. Humans don't learn from joy. You know, we learn from pain. Pain really makes people change. I heard this quote the other day that the rock bottom has a spring, you know, and that's true. You know, when it kind of pushes you up, you know, and it pushes you fast. So yeah, I do have a lot of, I guess to tell you guys a little bit about me, I am 34 years old. I was born in the middle of the jungle in Brazil, but I was born to a German parents. So it's a crazy mix.
Yeah.
Although I am, that's why I'm so white. although I am, born in Brazil, I am from German parents. So yeah, I was born in Brazil. I came to America when I was very young. When I guess my grandfather ran from Hitler, so to say, you know, fled the country. Most of my family came to America, and some of them went to Argentina, and I think my grandfather went to Brazil. But quickly, kind of everybody made their way here. So I think we were the last ones to come here, but so my whole family's here now. So, but yeah, I've been here now for nearly 30 years, you know, my entire life. So I don't know, I couldn't tell you much about Brazil. I don't know how many states there are, the capitals, and I could tell you everything there is to know about America. So I guess I would call myself an American now.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, once you're here, you're here. But you also, I mean, you kind of escaped. It wasn't just that your grandfather escaped Nazi Germany. You escaped some pretty rough stuff in Brazil, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can actually talk about the story now because it's kind of all in the past. But for a long time, I couldn't even tell people. But yeah, my dad worked for the biggest logging company in the Amazon. It still lives to this day. So I don't want to say which one it is, but people Google it, they'll know. They'll know. I don't want to say, but people can find out pretty easily. But he was the general manager. He actually oversaw all the operations. At that time, people used to just rob. You know, people used to just stop the logging trucks because I think trees at that time was worth more money than gold is today. It really was. I mean, it was a big deal. So people used to just kind of pull up to trucks and make, you know, put a fire, you know, set tires on fire across the roads and stop the truckers and just take their money, take the trucks, take the trees, you know, and in many cases they used to actually shoot these people and murder them. So my dad kind of oversaw that whole situation. And let's just say my dad, he looks a lot like James Dean. Like he was a big buff guy, never went to a gym. He's truly like one of those, had a long beard, had a cowboy hat kind of covering his face, always had a gun, couldn't own a gun in Brazil, but he always had a gun. He was one of those guys where you look at and you just don't want to talk to. It was like, oh, wow, who's that guy over there? Like, we don't want to, you know, like be associated. But you got close to him, and he was the nicest person, you know, like you could ever talk to, you know. But so, yeah, he kind of thread that line where it's like, you know, he can hurt you real bad if you get on the wrong side, but he'd also give his life to help anyone, you know. And his job would make him drive about 600 miles into the jungle of dirt road at the time from where we lived. And he used to only come home on the weekends. So I'd only see my dad for, you know, a day or two at a time. And it's kind of sad, I guess, for some people. For me, it's happy memories. But I had this little recorder. Remember those little small bitty tapes, like those little recorders that reporters used to have? I used to record my dad when I was like 2 years old, 3 years old, record him like talking to me. Hey, baby, hi. You know, like, who's daddy's baby, whatever. And I used to listen to the tape during the week as he was out working. And I tell people that. I remember I told this story to someone and the lady started crying. I was like, no, that's happy. Like, this is happy memories, you know? It's like awesome. But
well, I think it's pretty cool that at age 2 or 4 or whatever,
yeah, it was,
you had figured out how to reprogram your brain. It takes many people decades to
learn. Absolutely, absolutely. And how I came up with that, I don't know. I have a photographic memory. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that and how it works, mm-hmm. but yeah, I do have that, and I still don't know how to use it to the best of my abilities because it's so complicated. But I do amaze my mom all the time. Like, I would tell her things at times, like, hey, mom, remember that thing? Or she'll send me pictures of people I've met when I was, like, no joke, 2 years old or a year and a half that I met maybe 2-3 times. And she'd show me pictures of that person. I'd be like, yeah, that's so-and-so. She's like, no, that, how do you know that? And I'm like, I don't know, but I do, you know, like. I remember phone numbers. I remember the names of my teachers when I was like in preschool and all this other stuff. I remember my first address from Brazil. You know, like I haven't seen that in years and I still remember it, you know?
Wow.
But I guess moving on, my little brother got cancer when he was very, and I think it's pancreatic cancer, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I believe that's what it is. And my dad had then to give up that job, which he made, if you were to put that in today's money, he would still be making well above what the middle class would make. And, you know, he really made a lot of money. And he had to give all that up and kind of move back in town to stay close and to help my mom. And at that point, you know, he got another job. He didn't make as much. He did the same thing, just for a smaller company. And that's kind of when life changed a little bit, you know, like I went on to, you know, things started changing a little bit around the house and people from work and those incidents about people robbing trucks got a little bit closer to home. You know, it used to happen 500 miles away. So we'd hear these stories. I remember my mom's brother he went with my dad one time to the jungle and he came back and told my mom, I will never again go with your husband. You know, with my brother-in-law to the jungle again. She's like, why? He's like, three guys with AR-15s came up to us in the middle of nowhere and started running their mouths to him. Three guys with guns. He looked at him and said, I dare you guys to shoot me. Just pull the trigger. Just pull the trigger. And if you guys don't shoot me, I'm going to shoot y'all. And then he turned around and said, this is no joke. This sounds like a legend. This is no joke. These guys tell these stories all the time about my dad. My dad says, I'm going to walk back to my truck. Now, my mom's brother is only like 16 at the time. He's really young at this time. He says, I'm going to walk back to my truck and I'm going to grab a gun. By the time I get there, if you guys don't kill me, I'm going to shoot all of you guys. And he walked back to his truck and he grabbed a gun and just started shooting back at these guys. They take off. It's like three guys just run off. It's like I hear these stories. I could never do that. Like, I'm going to be honest. I could never do something like that. You know, like, you gotta be a man's man, too, to look at that and say, I don't care. I don't care about that. You know, do what you're going to do. So it's like, obviously, he didn't shoot anybody to hurt him. Like, he just, you know, scared him off. But stories like that are, like, normal. It happened once when I was young, too, with him. But there was no shooting. I do remember a guy pulling up to us and I remember him yelling and saying a bunch of things to my dad. And my dad said, oh, you know what? Just give me about 10 minutes. I'm going to drive up the road and I'm going to hand my son over to one of the ladies that like a cook at the place where, you know, the main house. and I'll be right back. Just wait for me right here. I'll be right back. I don't want to get in a fight around my son. I'll be right back. And I remember that guy just taking off before we did, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess he didn't want to do that. And I do remember my mom being very, very upset when she heard that story. I do remember her saying, yeah, I don't want you to take the kids anymore, you know. So, yeah, it's just crazy things like that was normal to me. You know, the town I'm from was very dangerous. Going to preschool when I was young, it wasn't like it was normal to walk back, like drive past like a dead person on the sidewalk. This is just normal. It's like this is normal, or like people drunk from the night before or stabbed or something. Now, I lived in a huge house, mansion, you know, in a great area. But you drive a block or two later, you go through this bad area. A block later, you know, it's like Chicago, if you guys been to Chicago before. Mm-hmm. Kind of like that, you know, that same, it's like really bad, you know, like half a mile later, oh, this is beautiful. Another half a mile, oh my God, is it a war zone, you know, like you don't know what you're getting into. Kind of like that, you know. Wow. So yeah, and then, yeah, that's a kind of a place I you know, grew up in, you know. And but, you know, we really had a great childhood, a great life. I mean, it was I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it was one of the best things that could have happened to me, you know. Kind of taught me a lot about life. So, but yeah.
Jody Lynn, I think I actually undersold this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like a movie.
It does. I told my dad, I was like, Dad, you won't live to see this, but after you die, I'm going to make a movie about you. I just cannot make it today because I don't know whose son or grandson might still hold a grudge against you in Brazil, might come hunting you down when they see you, you know what I mean, when they see this story. Who knows, you know? But it's like there's so many crazy things I could tell you guys about my dad. It's like interesting. And if you meet him, you couldn't sit next to him for 10 seconds and not laugh. He doesn't speak a word of English, speaks no English. What's up? Been here for 30 years, does not speak a lick of English. I'm so serious. But if you walk up to talk to him, he'll talk to you for hours and somehow he'll know what you're saying and you're going to know what he's saying. And he'll just straight up be talking in Portuguese. He actually thinks if he yells out in Portuguese, he's speaking English. So he just kind of yells out at people.
You just have to yell louder, that's all.
Just yell louder. And people somehow knows what he's talking about. It is just like he's so different today. Like, you know, you see him today and he's nothing like what I'm describing. But I could probably email you some pictures of what he looked like back in the day if you want to put on the page or something. It's totally different from what he looks like now. But yeah, it's just crazy. But what that led into the crazy story of me coming here. So at that time, the logging scene started to, the environmental police started getting a little bit more strict with the way things were going, which we all know the climate thing now. So, you know, it was that's where it all started. Don't cut these trees down. And, you know, that's where it came from. So we were in the middle of the whole climate change thing when it started. So we're right in the heart of it. So then the environmental police started requiring too many things and people just like, this is not worth it, and started shutting down production and stuff. But this one company he worked for, they still going on. That's the only one that survived. Yeah, so then it led into him having to deal with a lot of bad people. You know, it was one of those deals where he had to work alongside of people that people don't want to be associated with. You know, people running around doing illegal things, getting into trouble, and that kind of reflected back into him. So he just said, you know what, at that point, my brother had had three surgeries, and the doctors all three times told my mom, hey, go home. He's dead. Like, your son's is dead. Essentially, there's nothing you can do. Just go home. We even had a service for my brother twice, like with the coffin and everything. It was like, we'll just wait for him to die and put him in it. And somehow the next day he recovered and he was good again. Like, it brings me chill to even.
Because pancreatic cancer is no joke. That's probably the best one you can get.
100%.
Extremely painful. It's lethal. As far as I know, I lost a friend to it.
It is bad.
And so when I hear you telling the story, I say to myself, wow, is that really pancreatic? Seriously, because I mean, that's no joke.
No joke. And he's at this point 3 years old, you know, from 3 to 6. So my dad had well on the way to be one of the richest people in the state that we lived in. We had, you know, we had working cattle farms and all this other stuff he had acquired over the time of he was working. And he just started selling these things. It's funny because the three top richest people in that whole area of Brazil that own these farms, it's all three, the top three, so first, second, and third, belong to my dad, just to give you an example. It's like, what would happen if we would have stayed? I don't know, maybe my dad would have been dead. Maybe we would have been dead, but maybe we would have been the richest people there. You know, who knows? Do you know what I mean? It's like,
the richest dead people,
but yeah. Knows. Oh, yeah. Who knows? I know that nobody's left. All my dad's friends are pretty much dead or something. You know what I mean? So it's, wow. I know that. But, and some by accident, some were, you know, killed, you know. So, but then at that point, my dad came to the United States and he's like, his brother lived here, was doing very well. He has a huge construction company down in South. He had about 500 people working for him, which is huge, right? I mean, that's a lot of people.
Good operation.
So he came. Yeah. He has a framing company. You know, he builds houses. So he came to the United States and he stayed here for like a year. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go back and get my family and stuff like that. And he made plans to go back. But between the time he made the plans to go back and the time he actually went back, my mom had to travel with my little brother one last time to check on his cancer to see if he was cancer free. And she had dropped me off at my dad's boss's house and said, I'll stay with them for like a week. I'll be back, you know. And she went to a different state that was a couple of days away. Mm-hmm. And my mom said it was going to be a week. But 2 days later, I get home from school. And this house is like a prison. Like it's got fences. It's got guards. You know, it's like we're talking about people that makes millions a month. You know, we're very rich people. They have, you know, security full 24/7. Mm-hmm. The phone rings. I go bulletproof cars. That's how I went to school, you know, for that time period. So I get home, the phone rings, you know, I go to the wall. Some people won't even know what I'm talking about. The phones had cords at the time. I pick it up, you know, you had to dial. I pick it up and it's a woman, sounds kind of like my mom. And she says, hey, I'm here, you know, let's go. I'm here to pick you up. And I was like, where? I thought you were going to be gone for a week. She's like, and I'm probably 7, 8, maybe at this time. And she says, oh, no, just come. I'm outside. Just come outside. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm, you know, so naive being a young boy. I dropped my book bag off on the floor and I just run to see my mom, you know, even though she was only gone for a couple of days. And I opened the gate. And as soon as I step outside, I mean, within a feet, I just hear guns going off, just boom, 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 boom. They just spray the entire gate, the house. Now, in Brazil, there's walls. It's not like here. There's no fences. It's tall walls. Every house has one. So it's normal, right? You can't see houses. The houses are all behind a big wall. You only see the roofs of the houses. They start spraying this gate, and the security was behind. And he just grabbed me by the shirt and pulls me in and hits the button. The gate shuts, and they start shooting back from the thing. The car takes off, you know, speeds off, and, you know, people kind of come running from the inside of the house, you know, the maids and stuff. And it's like, oh, what happened? And it was like, oh, it wasn't your mom. It was someone else. So they had a lady call and say, you know, like at a certain time and tell them to come outside. And they I don't know if they wanted to kidnap me or kill me. I don't know what the deal was, but I know that it all worked out. But the very next day. So, and then also in Brazil, they have a military police that patrols. My dad was best friends with the lieutenant of over there at the, you know, he was like, kind of like he ran things. So they called him and said, can you escort my son out, you know, of the city and then meet with his mom, like at the airport. So they came and they got me in these police cars and they take me over to the airport. I get on a plane while my mom's waiting for me. We get on a plane and that was the last time that I saw that town. And I fly out to where my mom was. I go to stay with my grandfather, my German grandfather, for like a couple of months. And we get on my dad comes back and He goes on vacation with my mom for a couple of days and a couple of weeks, I guess. And we get on a plane and we fly to America, and that the rest is history.
That's really sad.
And that was the last time I saw Brazil. I'm actually I'm going back for the first time. I think June or August, between June and August, I'm going to go visit. And I'm going to go to that town too.
So that's crazy. Revisiting your roots is what you're trying to do.
I am going to go there. I do have a ton of people I keep in touch with, people we went to school with. Mm-hmm. I do have not really family. The only family I have is my mom's brother. He still actually lives there, that same guy from the incident. But he comes here so often that I don't need to go visit him, you know. So I'm only going to go just, you know, I do own some property down there too, but it's totally on the opposite side of the country. It has nothing to do with that area. So, yes, you know.
Wow. I mean, I don't even know where to begin on this one other than to say, let's bring it up to the present, because that story is just, oh my God, it's just chock full. Definitely undersold this one. But anyway, so you come to this country, you grew up here, you have that background that you left behind in the past. But I mean, I'm going to think about this from a law of attraction perspective. Did the craziness end once you got here?
No, the craziness switched. My house was peaceful in Brazil, and outside was chaos. When I got here, it changed. The outside was peaceful. Inside my house was chaos. And you're going to understand this, both of you, for different reasons. Now, as a woman, you'll know this. Imagine you've never worked a day in your life. You never made a dime, ever. And then you all of a sudden get a job where you're making almost as much as your husband makes, sometimes a little bit more. And now you're no longer, and you're young, you're 15 years younger than your husband. And now you, even though your husband gave you everything you could ever ask for, because my dad was very generous, but now you're buying your own things, you know, like you went to college, you've got your degrees, you never worked because you never had to. But now you do, and you have this whole new life ahead of you. That's, you know, you had a kid when you were 18 and you had four kids and you're still only 30. Now picture that. You had four kids and you're still only 30 years old and you have a job making, my mom made close to $100,000 in 2001. That's a lot of money at the time. Okay. That is a lot of money. Today, that's a lot of money. But at that time, it's like making $500,000 today. And now you want to live this different life that you've never lived before. But then on the other side, as a man, picture this. You are this guy, respected by everyone. You had everything. You had the perfect family. You made a ton of money. You called the shots. You made the rules. You come here and you make 5% of what you made before. Your wife no longer really listens to you all that much because she's got her own thing going on. Your kids now, you only see your kids for a couple of hours every night, because we got school all day. In Brazil, school is like three and a half hours a day, 3-4 hours. That's it. You go at 7 in the morning, you come back at 11, and then you go at 1 and come back at 4 or 5. That's how school is. It's either you go in the morning or go in the afternoon. And it's way harder too, by the way. School here is easy. School in Brazil is very difficult. If you're in first grade in Brazil, you can come here and go to fourth grade and be no problem. Yeah, it's much, much harder. And then you got my dad, who's this, you know, essentially this big G, you know, this, I got everything, I'm the man, to I'm nobody. Like, no one cares, you know what I mean? It's like, I have nothing. I have this big house. Now I live in a bedroom with two kids, you know, and a wife, where I used to have my own mansion. Now I'm in a mansion, but I live in a bedroom. And that had a big effect on him, and that caused him to fall into depression, which is probably the worst thing that I've ever witnessed in my life, is seeing my dad go through depression. I mean, I have had a lot of terrible things happen to me in the present day, but nothing like that. I seen a superhero go from a superhero, like backwards, you know, like you see the geek go into a superhero. I saw a superhero fall back into like a nerd and a geek, you know, which was tough to watch. And then I watched him overcome it and fall back into that superhero and take that role again. But was very difficult, you know. It was a very, very difficult time of my life, you know. So that was tough, you know. Coming here on the beginning was tough, was tough at home. In school, it only took me maybe 90 days to learn how to speak English, like to communicate. It only took like 90 days. I'm so young at that point, you know, it's easy. It took about 2 years to learn a lot, but it only took about 90 days to be able to talk to anyone. But school, you know, it was tough in school. There was a lot of bullying going around on the beginning because people just, I was different, you know. Now you get a kid from Mexico or Brazil or a different country that doesn't speak the language. People are used to that. There's so many immigrants. At that time in South Carolina, in Somerville, South Carolina, it was, people didn't know, there was no Mexicans, no anything, you know. Right. It was black and white. And when I came here, I had never heard, I didn't know what racism was. Like, this is unheard of in Brazil. I had no idea. So I had no idea what that was. And when I get to school, I soon realized there was blacks over here, then there was whites over there. And I couldn't understand that. I was like, why are they so mad at each other? Like, what's going on? Like, there were blacks and whites in Brazil, and it was normal. Like, there was no difference. There was no, like, division. Like, everybody was the same, you know? Mm-hmm. And I soon learned that, no, here, you've got the whites over there, and you got the blacks over here, and then you had a small amount of, like, immigrants over there. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I kind of fell into that small group, you know,
right.
for the beginning. And then afterwards, I was able to kind of thread between everybody else. You know, I wasn't part of the whites or the blacks. I just kind of did my thing. And if you liked me, we were friends. If you didn't, then we were, you know, not friends. But for the most part, it was a learning curve there. It definitely took a little bit to get used to that.
Yeah. But then you get through college, you get through
school. Didn't go to college.
I misspoke there. But you get through school, you move on to adulthood is where I'm trying to get to. And then you adopted some interesting life choices there. Talk about those choices.
Yeah, so I had a great mentor when I got here, I guess, to give you a perspective. The first week I'd gotten to America, one day my uncle had decided to take the kids hunting. They all went out to go hunting. And there was only the women left at the house. And it was a bunch of women. And for some reason, I don't remember, I wasn't home. Now, this is at a farm in the middle of the woods here, too, like in South Carolina. It's not in a town by any means. This guy pulls up, this American guy, like older American gentleman at the time, probably 40 years old, little older than that. He pulls up on an old beat up Toyota truck. Like, you'd see like a redneck, you know, drive those big antennas swinging. And he kind of tries to communicate. I've only been in America for 5 days. I didn't know what he was saying, you know. And we're communicating. Somehow I was able to communicate with him good enough to say, for him to ask me why he didn't knew my uncle went hunting. And he asked me, why didn't you go? And then I don't know. I just didn't know. And then he asked me to go with him a week after that. You know, like, he's like, I'll be here Saturday. I was like, yeah, sure. I didn't know who he was. But then I tell my mom, and my mom goes, are you crazy? No, I don't know. And then my aunt goes, oh, that's Greg. You know, it's like blue truck. I was like, yeah, that's Greg. He works for us, and he loves kids, and he's awesome. Just it's okay. He's been friends with us for over 10 years. He's okay. And I meet that guy, and he picks me up. We're going hunting that next weekend. He takes me over to his house, which is pretty much a wooded lot, and he gives me a chainsaw. He gets a chainsaw, and I'm 9 years old. And we start cutting down trees, and we start clearing land, and he's teaching me how to operate a four-wheeler, and we're working and working. Never once did I ask him, hey, I thought we were going hunting. No, we worked the entire day, and we just worked hard. And then at the end of the day, he said, and he gave me food and everything like that. He said, you want to shoot some guns? I was like, yeah. So we shot guns a little bit. He took me home, and he said, you want to come back again tomorrow? Like, yeah. So we did that for the entire summer, because when I got here, we had no school. It was summertime. So we did that for the entire summer. That's how I learned how to speak English fast, too, because I was dealing with him all the time. Now, this guy has the most influence on me out of anybody else, because he would sit and talk to me for hours. We were driving places, and he would tell me about life, and then tell me about different things and what I should and shouldn't do. I, to this day, have never tasted alcohol. I've never smoked weed or cigarettes or anything like that. And it was all due to him. You know, he said, don't do any of these things, work hard. And as bad things are always happening around me, about 3 months into our friendship, right at the end of the summer, he had two daughters. He had a small one that was adopted, and he had a biological one, right, with two different women. And we get home to his house, and there's like police everywhere. It's like, what's going on? We couldn't even get in the gate. I was like, what's going on? And we go in, and it was one of the hardest things I went through. Me and him were just laughing and having a good time. He walks up. The police looks right at him and says, your daughter's boyfriend, you know, shot her in the head 30 minutes ago. Mm. And it was one of the hardest things, you know. It's like I watched him go from laughing and smiling to it's like the worst, you know what I mean? And that was tough. I felt like it was like, oh man, things go wrong all the time. And that was tough. And it took a while for him to get over that. But I do feel like I played a big part in helping him, because he always wanted a son. And he, I think part of him played tough to not show to me, his wife at the time, and his small daughter too, to go like, oh, I'm tough, I can deal with this. But deep down I knew, you know, now I have a son. It's like I knew the effects that had. So it's like I just admire him today so much for that. So, but yeah, we dealt with that. Then he kind of kickstarts me into my life that I live now. He kind of helped me take that step. And just like any good mentor, if your mentor does a great job, you're supposed to go be better than him, right? Mm-hmm. And then soon, as I was getting as good as he was at the things we used to do, we started to butt heads, like it was like two guys, we would compete in everything. We would wrestle, and we would just do, you know, all of these things. So it's like he kind of built me like himself. He made me like him. And as I got older, we started to have confrontations. Not bad, but just, you know, like little things. We'd fight about the little things, you know, never in a bad way, but like we'd compete about everything. Like if I told him I made $1,000, he had to figure out a way to make 2,000. You know, we'd go hunting, and if I could carry a bag of corn to feed deer, he would have to carry two. You know, whatever I did, he had to do better. He learned how to speak Portuguese as fast as I learned how to speak English, just to claim that he was, I was smart. Oh, he was as smart as me or whatever. You know, this is the kind of guy you're dealing with. And he made me like that, you know, and he taught me about the law of attraction. He was the guy that introduced me at that age to the law of attraction. So he's the guy who kind of taught me that. And I used to think it was like some, I don't know, witchery craft or, you know, witchcraft or something like that. I was, because he would say things and then it would happen. I'm like, man, how is that even possible? And it was all the time. It wasn't just, he would start talking about people and that person would call us. Or he would say, like, I'm worried about so-and-so, and something would happen. And I'm like, hey, what is this? And then he slowly taught me. And then obviously after a while, I started doing my own research. And then just like anything else, I started to practice it, and, you know, and eventually got to the point where I'm teaching it now too, you know? But yeah.
So it evolved into, I mean,
it evolved.
Man, you just kind of, it's almost like you fell into it, really.
I fell into it. And the crazy thing is about the law of attraction is that things that happened to him happened to me. So he broke his right foot real bad. I broke my right foot real bad, but he was younger. So I broke my right foot real bad. He got bit by a snake. Then I got bit by a snake. And it's like, you know, like you can see to this day. You see how my hand is not, I don't know if you can tell, it's kind of dry. This one is normal. This one is kind of dry and everything. I have lotion on, so you can't really tell, but it's kind of dry. It's never went back to normal. It was a rattlesnake that bit me, put me in a hospital for 5 days. And it's like things happen to him, they happen to me. And even to that point, you know?
Joey, I don't know about you, but I have never interviewed anybody like Fernando. Have you ever,
no,
ever talked to, I mean, this is like a completely different dude.
I was just gonna say, it's just so funny, all of the stories that you've told, like a significant, you know, accident, whatever, something happening, like a rattlesnake biting you and you in the hospital for 5 days, probably like fighting for your life is what I imagine. And you're like, yeah, a rattlesnake bit me.
Well, yeah. Well, and even how that happened and how I ended up in the hospital, it's a funny story in its own. I mean, I'm hunting in Georgia. Now, we leave South Carolina and go to Georgia to hunt the most. I can give you guys 100 guesses at what I was hunting, you guys would never guess. Never. Would never even guess what I was hunting. We were hunting armadillos. You guys know what that is? Yeah, we were hunting armadillos. It's just fun. We had about 20 people. Now, to hunt armadillos, you kind of have to be a little bit off. I recognize that. Now, at the time, but because of the dogs will chase an armadillo and he'll run into a dark hole at 2 o'clock in the morning. Your choices are dig him out and grab him by the tail, you know, dig the hole and then grab him by the tail. But, you know, we kind of feel lazy. I don't feel like digging this hole. Let me stick my hand until this inside of this dark hole that I have no idea what's inside. And let me just feel around and look and see if I can feel a tail, and I'm going to pull it out of there. As you can tell, I'm not a genius by any means at that point in my life. And like an idiot, I stick my hand in the hole. And as soon as I do, I feel this slap, like a slap. And I'm like, what was that? But, you know, again, not a genius at that time. Let me do it again. And I stick my hand in it again. And it hits me one more time. And I pull out my hand and half the snake comes out. And it was a big rattlesnake. It started rattling. And I was like, oh, no, this is bad. This is really bad. And then as I turn around, I hear the dog go, and I'm like, what was that? And it bites the dog too, because the dog needs to smell it. So now I'm walking out to the road and I see a bunch of guys drinking and having a good time. And I'm walking out to the road. I get to the road. I'm like, hey, listen, my hand, I got bit by a snake, by a rattlesnake. And everybody's drunk and everybody's just laughing. Oh, you're whatever. It's a joke. You know, I think I was 18 at the time. Nah, you didn't get bit. I'm like, no, I got bit. No, I didn't get bit. They didn't even bother to ask me to see my hand. And about 20 minutes later, we just kept on hunting. About 20 minutes later, my uncle goes, where's the dog? And I'm like, the dog got bit. It was like 5 dogs, but he asked about that specific dog. Oh, he got bit too. He's like, no snakes bit you guys, whatever. Even though we'd see snakes every time, they still didn't think that I got bit. And I remember my uncle calling the dog and we shined the light. This is like at 2 a.m. We shined the light down the road and the dog is standing there. We walk up to the dog. The dog, his face is like this big. He's swollen up. The snake bit him right on the mouth. So it got really big. At that point, people saw the dog was hurt. Everybody ran past me, was grabbing the dog and trying to give the dog a shot, a penicillin shot. And I'm like, my hand, guys, I'm about to die here. My hand. And then they come and they look at my hand, and my hand is huge. Like, I couldn't even do this. And it's purple and it's like yellow liquid coming out of it. And they put me in a car and we got to drive to a hospital. There's no GPS at this time. Remember, this is back 2007. There is no smartphones or GPS. You can go, hey, Siri, where is the local hospital? No, you just had to figure it out. So we see a cop. The cop had a guy pulled over on the side of the road on the highway. And we pull up next to this guy. I'm on the back seat. Like at that point, I could feel like I was kind of out of it. The poison was kind of, it was making me a little groggy. And the cop pulls his gun out. I'm like, hey, hands off. My cousin's like, yo, this kid got bit by a rattlesnake. My cousin did not have a license, by the way. He was only like 14 or 15 at the time. Because he's the only one that didn't drink. He's the only guy that didn't drink. Somebody had to drive me, So I'm full of mud. I got mud all over my body and everything, all over me. I'm in the swamps. I'm sticking my hand inside of a dark hole. I'm full of mud. The cop shines the light. He's like, you got bit? This big redneck cop, like, hey, son, did you get bit? And I'm like, yep, where? And I show him, how'd you get bit? Oh, it bit me by my hand. I explain him, I was hunting armadillos. How do you hunt armadillos? Well, and I go to hold the whole thing. Like 5 minutes into it, my cousin goes, sir, if you can't help us, we can't waste time. He just speeds off. My cousin just took off. And we drive a mile down the road, and this cop comes behind us, lights us up. And as he's pulling over, he pulls beside us and goes, just follow me. Just drive as fast as I do. He turned out to save my life. The cop did. Oh, wow. He turned out to be a blessing, because we get to the hospital at like, it was probably 4 or 5 in the morning at that time. And we walk up, there's a guy drunk and there's another guy with a headache. And I asked the lady, typical emergency room, hey, I got bit. Here, fill this up and have a seat, whatever. We'll call you in like an hour. The cop goes, no, you're gonna take him back right now, you know? And then they start arguing back and forth, and the cop literally starts banging on the door and says, where's the doctor? This Indian doctor that was probably maybe 28 at the time, 30 years old, walks out and says, oh, help him, you know? And he took me back. And as soon as he saw, I wasn't looking at my hand. I was trying to avoid it, you know, because I could feel pain and it was burning. And he looks at my hands and he goes, this is bad. This is really bad. And that's when I realized, oh, this is not funny. I thought like, oh, I'm used to seeing the dogs get bit all the time and nothing happens. They're after a week, they're okay. It's like, this is not good. And he ties my arm up with the band and sticks a morphine, I believe it was, or Benadryl. Mm-hmm. And I immediately start seeing a bunch of people, and I'm like laughing because I'm, you know, they gave me some medicine that makes me kind of high. So I'm starting to laugh a little bit. And they lay me down. They ask me like two or three questions, and then I close my eyes and I go to sleep, right? My mom lived at this point 15 hours away from the hospital. Now, this is like 5 a.m. I open my eyes and I see my mom in front of me. And I'm thinking, how did she get here so fast? I see the sun just coming up, and I'm thinking it's been like 2 hours, you know, since I got, you know, I got there. And I try to get up, and they hold me. They was like, no, you got to stay down. I'm like, ask my mom, how did you get here? And she's like, oh, no, don't worry about it, whatever. And I'm like, no, how'd you get here? They're like, what day is today? And I'm like, today's Sunday. No, today's Thursday. Thursday? I was sleeping that whole time. Yeah, I was off that whole time, so. Yeah.
Wow.
That's typical day in my life right there.
Somehow I have a feeling there's a whole bunch of listeners who are saying, wow, my life doesn't sound nearly that difficult.
Oh, no. I've had a lot of tough things happen. A lot. I've had some things happen.
But you came through with such a positive attitude. How did you do that?
You know, that question is interesting because this is what you can do, right? When life hits you hard, you got two choices. You stay down and you're like, oh, poor me. Or you can figure out a way to bounce back, right? This is just me. I know that when something hurts you, you only got one thing to do. You have to come back better than before. Doesn't matter what happened. Your wife left you, took everything you had, no problem. Now I'm going to figure out a way to have twice as much of what I had before and a better looking girlfriend, your wife or whatever. Hey, my husband, yeah, you know what? My husband is abusive. He hit me, whatever. Okay, no problem. Now I'm going to figure out a way to get the man of my dreams, someone that loves me and doesn't put his hands on me, you know, accepts me for this. I just think that if you apply positivity to anything you do, there's no way to go wrong. It is impossible to do all the right things and fail. It's impossible. There's literally zero chance that you would ever fail if you actually did the right thing. If you wake up every day and you put your energy and focus into something and you have a good attitude, it doesn't matter what it is. It's going to work out. It doesn't matter. Even if whatever you think the goal is doesn't happen, and you get something else, that something else is better than what you thought was the goal before. It's always, when I think about it now, like I think about a bad breakup I went through. And so at the time, it was so tough. Now I look at it like, thank God that happened, because yeah. Had that not happened, I wouldn't be here doing this. You know, and it's, you find out that once you find out that you are exactly where you're supposed to be, it doesn't matter. Even if you're homeless right now on the street, whenever you sit and you think, okay, hold on, because you got to analyze yourself. You can't just let life carry you. You have to take charge. So if you sit back and say, okay, hold on, this happened, that happened, where do I go from here? What do I actually want, and what am I willing to do to get it? Once you do that, it's impossible that you won't get. I mean, impossible. It is impossible. There's no way. But you have to do something about it. You can't just have that idea and just sit back. You know what? I'm going to watch TV today. And I'm gonna... No. You have a goal. Formulate a plan. Put the plan into work. and just watch things happen. That went wrong. Okay, I have to go this way and adjust. Oh, that's not working. Well, then I'll do it this way. The thing is you set a goal and then you focus on what you do to get it. Because another thing that I see people make a mistake all the time is, let's say I want a Ferrari. Well, I want to own a Ferrari. And then they'll sit back and think, how do I, I'm going to get a Ferrari. And they think Ferrari, Ferrari, Ferrari. You're not going to buy one if you think like that. What you have to do is you sit back and say, okay, I want a Ferrari. Okay, how much does it cost? Oh, 200 grand. Okay, 200 grand. How am I going to get 200 grand to buy that Ferrari? And then you sit back and think, let me see. Okay, if I do this and then I do that, I believe I can make 5K. Then if I sit back here and then and I do this and I apply that to this and I don't have a college degree, but I'm in shape, I bet if I go train some doctors, I can make a little bit of extra money. But I'm big and strong. Well, I bet I can help people do this and do that. And you start to take your strengths and then you apply to the process that you need to do to get that Ferrari, you'll get it. But if you sit back, I want a Ferrari, but you never do anything, but you're not going to get it. But if you actually sit back and say, I want this, this is what I want, and I'm here. How do I get from here all the way to here? You build out a plan, and then you focus on that. Forget about the Ferrari. Focus on what you have to do. That's it. When you start to focus too much on something, it's like the law of attraction. It has a negative effect. It has a negative effect. Always. Think about how many times you're scared of something and you focused on it and it actually happened. All the time. So it's like, this is what I want. This is where I'm at. How do I close that gap? And then you focus on that. Don't focus on this or on this. Focus on what to do. And if you wake up every day and you take at least one step towards that, it's impossible that you're going to fail. It's impossible. And then maybe you get halfway there and then you're like, you know what? I actually don't want that Ferrari anymore. Maybe a Corvette will do. And it's half the price. But you genuinely want that now for whatever reason. And you're going to be way happier with that. Or you get halfway there or you get to the Ferrari and say, I'm not wasting money on this. I can buy that house and I can fix it up and sell it and I can buy the Ferrari and still have money left over to go buy another house. It's like thing, you know what I mean? Like you adjust. If you just focus on what you have to do to achieve your goals, it's impossible that you don't get it. I'm saying it here now live. If you focus on your goals and you focus on what you want and then you make a plan and then you work that plan out every single day, you won't fail. Impossible.
Jody Lynn, you're doing a lot of shaking of your head up and down. What are the parts that are really resonating with you?
Fernando, I love your energy. I think it's so incredible to look at your story and see how positive you've been through everything. And I think that's a testament to the examples that you've had in your life. I think what resonated out of your entire story for me, or what, things that I saw were commonalities, is watching these two great men that you admired and, loved dearly, obviously, go through really hard emotional things and then eventually bounce back. And the way that you describe them is like, it was heartbreaking to watch and so painful for them to go through. And I can see how that impacted the way that you look at everything else. Snake bite, no big deal. It's not that. It's not what they went through. And it brought you to this new level of positivity in the way that you look at everything in your life. And just hearing all of those stories, it's amazing to also say what Walt said, like you think about regular problems and it's like, wow, it's not a snake bite. It's not people shooting at me in the jungle. It's not all of these things. I can spring back, as you said, and what you were saying, I completely agree. If you're sitting there just, I want this. The universe can only respond in a, yeah, sure. Yeah. You do want this and you're going to continue to want this. That's, that's the way that it works. But when you allow yourself to say, okay, I'm going to get this, or I'm getting this, or it's reframed in a different way, and then you allow yourself to, you know, imagine, to discover, whatever the word is you want to put here, brainstorm, how do I close that gap, and then start taking those action steps? You're right. You can't fail, because you'll get along the way and you'll learn about yourself, whether it's, I don't really want that, or, ooh, I could do this and I could do that, and that's going to make me feel better. So, yeah, I just love what you're saying.
Absolutely.
That feeling piece is huge. And that's probably my biggest takeaway from your stories, because your stories are all told the way a good story is told, in terms of what the action was. Here's what happened, then this happened, and this happened, this happened, this happened. But it's also pretty evident to me, I suspect to Jody Lynn as well, that what was driving the whole thing was the emotion. You had become a, what I would call, a very strong emotional being. Mm-hmm. And you weren't afraid of emotion. You figure, okay, when I'm feeling an emotion, it means this is important. This is something I'm going to give my attention to. And so you just learned to do that. I mean, to me, that's how I answered my own question that I asked you. Because I asked you, how did you manage to stay positive for all this? Well, to me, the answer is, that's where the energy was. The energy was in the positivity. So you just kind of felt drawn to go that way. You didn't really, it's almost like you didn't have a choice. I mean, you did. You really did. But it felt to you, I imagine, that that's the only way to go. Because that's where the strong feeling is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. That's interesting. And like I said, it's hard to stay that way a lot. So I'll catch myself, you know, if you know anything about law of attraction, you'll know about frequencies and energy and stuff like that. Sometimes I'll be caught in having a bad day, and I'll be at a low frequency, low energy, and I'll act a certain way, and then I'll catch myself doing it and try to correct it, you know? So like, even though I practice this, I'm not always perfect at it, but nobody is. No one is. But as long as you're willing to work on it a little bit, and the most important thing is, you have to try to catch yourself when you're being operating at a low frequency, and be like, oh, hold on. This is not me, or this is not how I want to be perceived or you looked at. Let me take a breath, deep breath here, and let me start this thing over. And if you keep that sort of in the back of your head and keep thinking about it, you'll see that when you get caught in a low frequency state and people make you mad in traffic or you want to lash out, you'll realize this doesn't matter. This does not matter. You know, it's like even like, I think humans now, we're spoiled. We are 100% spoiled. 100%. Like, I'll be the first to admit it. Like, America, when people say, oh, it's, back in the days, it's the greatest country in the world, it's the greatest country. And a lot of people say, no, it's not. It is. It is. Even with all the crazy stuff that we see going on in politics and this and right and left and whatever, all these agendas in school, it's still so much better than anywhere. It is so much better. I know people try to be like, oh, it's not because you got this in schools and in the law. Guys, you can't even compare this country to other countries. You can't. You can't.
You don't have a wall around every home because you know the outside is dangerous and crazy.
100%. We don't even have a wall around every house. And you know what? There's very few countries in the world that could say that. Very few that could say that. You know, and it's one of those things where if you sit and think about it, right? I don't know where you guys live, but right now I'm in Minnesota. I can walk out of my house right now on foot, and I don't live in the middle of a city. I live in, you know, a little bit away, but I could walk 5 minutes and see a McDonald's, a Burger King, a Mexican restaurant, a Chinese restaurant. I don't have to go very far to get food. I can take my phone out right now as we're talking, and I can order food and have it right here warm and ready to go. I have 100 options within 40 minutes to be delivered at my house. And if I'm willing to spend 10 extra dollars, I can have it here in 15. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, even other first world countries, you don't have that luxury. And that's something as small as food, what we don't even think about. We don't even think about food. You're hungry? Go eat. That's not how it is on other countries. I know that it seems like the news shows it. It's not. It's like countries, yeah, there are no, you know, not a lot of people are starving, but at the same time, you can't just walk outside and go buy food at the corner. That's not how it works. You got to cook and you got to, it's a whole different thing. Like my mom, for example, if I tell my mom, and my mom is young and she's not like some of like the olden times, like my grandmother, you know, no, my mom is more modern and everything. She's more of the modern woman, you know, two degrees, went to college and all this other stuff. Very technological, you know what I mean, advanced and all this other stuff. If I was to be at her house and say, Mom, let's go out to eat, she'll have a heart attack. What? Go, what do you mean go out to eat? I could just make whatever from scratch right now. And when I say make whatever from scratch, I don't mean like get this and then, you know, like a rice and beans. No, she will get flour and then she'll take corn and she'll, you know, hit it until it's grinded up and get the flocks. And it's like a totally different world. We don't even think about these things nowadays. It's like, you know, it's so, you know, people are so different. They do so many different things. Culture is like we're sitting here complaining, to make a circle back to the point. We're complaining about little things. Oh, this went wrong. Dude, there's people right now that can't even eat somewhere. You know what I mean? There's people that their families have just got shot down in the corner over a pack of cigarettes. What are we complaining about? Do you know what I mean? So it's like you got to keep a positive energy. You know, it's people making $100 a month and it has to pay for rent and feed his family. Why am I going to complain? Little rattlesnake bit my hand. Does it hurt? Yeah. Could I have lost my arm? But that was the worst. Losing my arm was like the worst scenario. Big deal. It's people out there that don't have both arms still got to work a job and feed his family. So it's like here in America, if I lost my arm, I could probably get $600 a month for disability. You know what I mean? It's like it still works somewhere else for. So it's like it's we gotta stay positive. You have to. I mean, what are you gonna do? Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to sort of navigate these bad situations. It's like, okay, this happened, but that was good. So I learned this. And if you just look at it like that, every bad situation, you try to look at the good. Because if you look closely, that'll be good. Every bad has a good. Just like every good has a bad. You win the lottery, what happens? Your life changes. You figure out you got a bunch of parents or a family that you never knew you had. And you know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying? But then you go broke and you also learn when people just run away from you and you're like, oh, okay, so that guy was willing to help that person. And you learn, you know, you learn different things in bad and good. But I tend to always, something bad happens, okay, well, what can I do about it? What can I take from it that's going to help me? You just live like that. You can't go wrong.
This has been one of the most interesting episodes we've done in a long time, just because of the storytelling, but because of the perspective too. Yeah. I love your perspective. The perspective, it has a number of different elements to it. One of the elements that I think is really poignant for anybody who was born in America is to recognize that when somebody comes to America like you did, there's a different level of appreciation that you really can't have if you're born. It's really not possible to have. I mean, you can do it kind of vicariously like we do. You know, we have conversations with people like you. But unless you've been there and done that and been through that, you don't really have that same perspective. So when I hear you talking about, you know, how easy it is, and like, there's food on every corner and all that kind of thing, it reminds me like, wow, yeah, this really is a pretty special place to live. And it's
it really is
while to appreciate it, to be grateful for it being able to live in a place like this.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And if you just shut down the news, you don't see
for any 90%, reason, just shut it 90, down.
Just shut it down. You don't see 90% of what they're talking about. You don't see it. What they tell you, oh, this is going on, you don't see it. Because what I've learned with America is this. There's period of I love history. So I go back and look. You have these things that happen that pulls it this way. It's like you're going this way, this way, this way, this way, and you think everything is going, it's gonna blow up and it's not gonna be any good, it's gonna ruin. All of a sudden we kind of have a reset and things change, and then it's the big boogeyman. It's almost like there has to be a boogeyman that's gonna ruin it for everybody, and then that boogeyman just goes away and then things go back to normal for a while. And then it's like, yeah, it is a little bit of a weird time right now. We all know that it's different, but you know what? I see all these people talking about other. I don't see anybody leaving. I don't see it.
Yeah, they're actually trying to get in the other way.
They're coming here. Exactly. Yeah. So you can tell me it's not the best country, but why are you here if it's not that good? So what are you doing here? You just go. I'm from Brazil, and I wouldn't fight a war for Brazil for nothing. I would do anything for America. They call me right now, I'd go fight in the war, no problem. Wouldn't do it for Brazil. I'd be the first to tell you. Would not do it. I'd do it in a heart. They don't even have to ask me. I'd volunteer to go. No problem here. You know, and it's like I start to believe the news whenever I see people breaking the border wall down to get into another country. I see Mexico getting here, not the Mexicans, but I see people breaking to get in here. I don't see people breaking to get away.
Yeah.
I don't see people rushing the Canadian border to get into Canada either. So it's like,
no, they're leaving Canada.
Exactly. Exactly.
She lives in Alberta, so she knows.
Oh, there you go. Well, there you go. There you go. It's Canada right now is going through the same thing Brazil is going through. And America is just a little bit behind, but it's going through the same thing too, politically speaking. Mm-hmm. And and we won't know exactly what's going on until we're way down the line, and then we hear when people can't pay for what they did anymore, we'll figure it out. Just like any history, you know what I mean? Once everything's gone and the people are kind of not heard of, talked about anymore, and they're all, one is dead, one is gone, one's here, we'll know what's going on in Canada and America and Brazil. But this is gonna be down the line. Mm-hmm. You know, right now we don't know. We know it's bad. We know there's something weird, but we don't know who's going to be brought to justice, sort of say, you know, we don't know who's messing everything up. We don't know. You know, we don't know.
I love the confetti, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how that's getting it. I saw the thumbs up, I guess. And I get the thumbs up. I saw, look, there you go. I don't even know how that works. I didn't do it. I don't know how it's doing it, but. Yeah.
That's your phone that's doing that. But
I guess the confetti came in at a good time, right? It's like,
well, yeah. We were celebrating what we were summarizing here, which is pretty
good. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
There's a couple things we got to cover before we're done, though, because we always do this. First of all, there are going to be some people who are going to want to reach out and find out more about you and talk to you and learn more about your crazy perspective on life and so forth. For someone who wants to do that, how do they find you?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is on Instagram. My Instagram is @Nando_Knip, my middle name. So I could send you a link or something to afterwards.
Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes, make it easy for people.
Yeah, yeah. And they just send me a DM, just send me a direct message. I respond to everyone. Sometimes it takes a couple of days, but I do, because I have multiple businesses that I run. It's not just the coaching, the mentoring. I don't even call it coaching. I call it like eye-opening. It's not a mentor. It's like an eye-opening experience, because everybody has the potential. Everybody. When I tell you, like, there's people that I know right now here in America that came from Brazil or Mexico that cannot write their own names on a piece of paper that makes $100,000 a month legally. Legally, the right way. They don't even know how to write their own names. You're telling me that a normal person that's went to school can't do it? They're not doing anything different than everybody else. They just decided they're going to try. That's all it takes. When you decide, okay, I am going to make it happen. Now I'm going to fail. You got to know, I will fail multiple times, but I'm going to be the one that stays consistent, and I'm going to go until I make it happen. Not going to go until I get tired of it and give up. I'm going to try until I make it happen. And sometimes that's the law of attraction will bring you that idea. If you're lost, I don't know what to do. How would I do it? That's why the law of attraction is important in understanding frequencies and energy. When you put yourself in a frequency, in a high frequency all the time, and you start to put in action the laws of attraction, things will come to you. That's why it's called attraction. It comes to you. So for some people that are there right now wondering, well, I don't know what to do. I wouldn't know how to make money. And then the law of attraction isn't just about making money. Most people don't even do it for money. They do it for relationships. They do it for avoiding problems. That's how I used it in the past, to start to avoid some of the bad situations. And I was able to. And now I used it for money. I used it for relationships. I used it even to have a son. I used it. Do you know what I mean? So it's people need someone to open their eyes and show them something they couldn't see before. That's it. You need someone to go and say, look, if you do this, that happens. If you do that, this happens. And then you have to do this all the time, consistently, and then you're going to achieve X. But you have to do it. And most people will start, and they'll have no idea what to do. They'll have no, and then they'll start doing it within 2-3 weeks. They'll be like, you know, I had this great idea. And it's like, yeah, that's it. That's what happens. You start to have these great ideas. And you tell me right now, if your grandson or your son came to you and said, Dad or Mom, I want to play football. What's the first thing you do? You find a coach. You find someone that can teach him. Yeah, you got to find someone that can teach him how to play football. And then someone will teach him. And then he has to develop on his own and then get better. If he wants to fight, okay, well, I'm going to find a gym where there's an instructor that can teach you how to fight. Then you figure out if fighting is for you. So I get baffled when I hear people saying, I don't need a mentor. I don't need anybody to show me anything. I'll just do how? Everything in our lives is about learning from someone else. And then when it comes to them making the biggest decision of their lives, they want to learn it on their own. It's not going to happen. You need to learn from someone. There's someone has to show you the way. Or you can spend 10 years figuring out something that someone like me can show you in a month. It's up to you. I chose the way someone showed it to me, and I made it happen. You know what I mean?
I can attest to it because that's exactly what I do with podcasting. I've been doing it for the last 11 years, so I totally understand what you're talking about. But Jody Lynn,
absolutely.
I mean, whenever I come to you at the end, I mean, I'm always asking myself, okay, what's she going to come up with this time? You have so much to draw on today. I mean, I don't even know where you're going to pick from. There's so much to draw on. But I always ask Jody Lynn to summarize, like, what's the big takeaway for today's show? Jody Lynn, what's today's big takeaway?
I think there's two. Change your perspective and you'll change your life. And another big takeaway, and you touched on it briefly, Fernando, is that you're exactly where you're supposed to be, whether that is good or that is bad. But there is always good when there is bad, and there is always bad when there is good. That's how the light and the dark work. It's the contrary positions. So if you're in one, look for the other. And that's where we come back to perspective.
There you go.
See? You can see why.
There you go. I wish she had a mic that she could drop and just boom, her screen goes black and she like just exits the podcast like a game. So like boom, drops the mic and it's gone. It's like, oh, where did she go? Oh, she's out right now figuring out how to get into a high frequency stage.
I love it.
That's perfect. Awesome. That was perfect. I have to say this is awesome. You guys both had great energy, which is not common. You'll see people forcing it sometimes. You see people trying to make it like they do, but you guys actually do, which is amazing. You know, it's amazing. It's like you guys actually pay attention, which is hard to do. I did a lot of talking for you guys to remember everything and so you guys could summarize it no problem. You know what I mean? Touch on the important points. It's awesome. I love it. We'll have to do it again in the future sometime.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we call it Your Daily Dose of Happy is because that's how you get happy, by focusing on stuff like this and focusing primarily on how do you feel better. Well, you feel better by telling stories, by sharing experiences, by connecting, by doing all these things that we're doing here. So
And by the way,
I want to throw the compliment back to you. This is actually tying into something that I've been doing for the last few years, which is recognizing that there's a gap that takes place in society. We recognize people who have great achievements. We recognize people who do things that we can obviously see. There's one kind of recognition we don't get, because people like you come onto a podcast like this, you share your insights, you share your beliefs, your thoughts, your the things that you've learned over time. And there are people listening who pick it up, who you'll never meet them, you'll never see them, you'll never find out what happened, but you helped them in ways you didn't know about. We never get thanked for that. So on behalf of the people that you've never met, you never seen, never will meet, never will see, thank you for what you're doing, because you're making a difference in this world.
Absolutely. And again, I don't just talk to people that pay me to help them. People are welcome to go to my Instagram and have a laugh. I've deleted actually a lot of content from the past. I used to do a lot of political videos and stuff like that. And I used to do a lot of law of attraction videos. I deleted that and I've taken a different approach. I'm actually going for more of a humor and laughing and having fun. Mm-hmm. I actually put up a video yesterday acting like a misogynist. You know, like I had my girlfriend It's like, I'm going to help her work out. And I had her like tuck the weight and she was pretending to be sweeping the floors with it and holding a dumbbell like a baby, you know, like trying to be funny and stuff like that to kind of grab people's, you know, like some people were laughing, some people were mad, like, oh, you can't do that, whatever. And it's funny because the men were mad and all the women that should have been upset were all happy. I got so many messages from women just laughing and just being like, that's great content. Do more like that. It's like, it's a good, you know, it was fun. It was, so it's like, if people just want to laugh a little bit, I'm working on a lot of new content, just humor. I don't actually post too much about the law of attraction on my Instagram. I work with people through there, but I don't post too much. And so if people want to laugh a little bit, if they just want to send me a message, if they just want to talk to me or whatever, feel free to go to my Instagram and send me a message. And I'll send it on the chat here too, my handle, and you can post it and people can find me there.
Perfect.
Joey Lynn, do you agree this is like the most novel interview we've ever done?
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
Completely different. It is awesome. It's fabulous. Yeah, but I mean, I mean, I've done 2,000 plus episodes, Fernando.
Really?
2,000 plus episodes, and there are many who I think back and I say, wow, that was really fabulous. That was an amazing interview. This is one of those. This is one of those.
I appreciate
those interviews where I say, my God, I've never talked to anybody like this before. But how much?
I am honored. I am honored that you say that. Thank you so much. It really means a lot to me.
It means a lot to us too. So thank you much for being here. And Jody Lynn, as usual, thank you for all your insights and your participation and your contributions. They were absolutely magnificent. Thank you to our podcast listeners everywhere. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.